Speaking on the program at this time is Brother James W. Boyd.
On Sunday evenings of late, we have been looking at the Bible book by book. And tonight, we have come to the book called 2 Samuel. The Bible student knows that the man David was one of the most outstanding of all the Bible characters, particularly of the Old Testament. We read about him not only in 1 Samuel in the early days of his life, all the way through 2 Samuel that gives emphasis to his reign as king, and then even into 1 Kings as we read of the accounts of his last days and ultimate death. Of course, David is referred to many, many times in the New Testament as well as the Old. And he was one whom God used in a very essential place to reveal and to bring about the plan of salvation through a descendant, a fleshly descendant of David, Jesus Christ. 2 Samuel continues to tell us of the history of Israel and tells us of the history that transpired immediately after the death of their first king, Saul, who proved to be a very great disappointment to God and to the people. But 2 Samuel, like some of the books immediately before and after it, emphasizes the specialness of this nation. We need to have respect for ancient Israel. Now, we're not talking about the present-day nation that is called itself Israel or the Israelis. That has no connection whatsoever with anything of which the Bible speaks. We're talking about ancient Israel that God used. And the second king of the people was David. And after the death of Saul, David was soon to become king. He was briefly challenged for that position by a son of Saul named Ish-bosheth, who was encouraged along to challenge David's claim to the throne by the captain of Saul's army, whose name was Abner. But 2 Samuel tells us how David first became king over the tribes of southern Judah, and then later on, through a series of negotiations with Abner, who was really the power of the northern part of the land, he becomes king over all Israel. We're also introduced to a man that played a very significant role in the reign of David, and his name was Joab. A controversial person, a very complex individual. Joab was the kind of person that I like to think of as being one who had just an extreme amount of loyalty to David, but at the same time seemed to often disrespect David. But not really out of an attitude of disrespect, but Joab always had the attitude that he would show his loyalty to David, not necessarily the way David would have had that loyalty demonstrated, but the way that Joab thought David ought to have done and the way that he ought to take care of David's affairs. And oft times David and Joab would clash over first one thing and then the other. Having noted that David became king through negotiations with Abner, the former captain of Saul's army, the very man that had led many of their escapades and pursuits in trying to kill David, Joab looked upon Abner as his arch enemy. And it wasn't very long that Joab killed Abner, one of several prominent men that Joab killed. And this was an event that angered David considerably. But we will see here something of the character of David, how that he mourned over Abner. He mourned profusely over the death of Saul, who had sought his life. And you would expect he also mourned heavily over the death of Jonathan, Saul's son, but who had been a friend all of his days. David was a man of war. He had many battles. He never lost a war. 2 Samuel contains for us a record of many of the conquests of this man. And it was God through David and the battles and the military maneuvers of David that made Israel the dominant power in that portion of the earth at that time. And David had a great reputation, not only among his own people, but among all the surrounding nations for being such a matchless warrior. In fact, as one looks at the history of Israel, and ultimately we come to that glorious, prosperous, peaceful, abundant, luxurious reign of Solomon, we see that that which really made it possible was the success of David. David was the one that was able to suppress all the enemies, make it possible for him to have peace. David was the one that had power over these enemies and made it possible for Solomon to extract tribute from them. Hence the great prosperity of Solomon's reign. So Solomon really could look back to the exploits of his father David. And if he was properly considering things, he would know that David is the one that had made it possible for him to have the glorious reign that he had. Among the things that David did was to take the city of Jerusalem. And here's where Jerusalem becomes such a prominent city. David is the one that made Jerusalem the capital of his kingdom. We read of several actions of David, such as the time that, though the ark had been captured by the Philistines and ultimately returned into the land of Israel, David now brings the ark to Jerusalem. And this is really one of the darker chapters of David's life, not the darkest that we shall see later, but a darker chapter nonetheless. We had the ark transported in a way that was not according to the law of Moses as to how the ark was to be transported. The Ark of the Covenant was to be transported by staves through the rings on the sides of the ark, and those staves lifted to the shoulders of the priest. David, however, was bringing the ark back to Jerusalem by a cart. You will remember how that there was a man going along with it who obviously was very sincere. The oxen stumbled. He, fearing that the ark might slide from the cart, reached out and unlawfully, because he was not of the Levitical tribe, touched the ark, and he was struck dead. This angered David. And that was a very presumptuous anger on his part, because this man did violate the law of God. David should have recognized that part of it was his own mistake. But David also had a very mixed character about him. He was a very loving and tender and kind man in so many ways, though a warrior. We usually think of a warrior, a fighter, one without mercy, one without compassion. David was indeed a great warrior and fighter, but he was not one without mercy and compassion. And he showed this in so many ways. One way that he showed kindness was for the son of Jonathan, named Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth was lame. He had become lame when a nurse was running and dropped him. And as a result, he was lame the rest of his life. But to show kindness and love and affection, not only particularly, I should say, for Jonathan, he showed kindness toward Mephibosheth and brought him to his court and allowed him to eat at the king's table. To show again another mark of the character of David, his good intentions, and how he wanted to honor and praise God. For this he is noted. David proposed to build a temple to the Lord. Doubtless it was one of the disappointments of David's life that his request to build that temple was denied him. Nathan, who was generally a good advisor, had encouraged David to go ahead and proceed with that temple. But God told Nathan to go back to David and tell him, no, you are not the one that will build the temple. Your son will build the temple, but you will not build the temple. And we learn in other books that it was because David was a man of war. David showed a remarkable characteristic about him, however, being sorely disappointed that he was not going to be permitted to bring this temple into reality, and he wanted to do it to praise God. He did not pout, he did not sulk, he did not back off from all things. He spent a great portion of his remaining life gathering the materials that Solomon could later use in the upbuilding of that temple. And this showed a great characteristic, didn't it? The attitude that whatever the Lord wants, that generally was the attitude of David in all of his dealings with God and with his people and with his family and with nearly everything with which he touched. His son was promised to build that temple, but David was one who did so much to establish among the Israelites true and genuine and reverent worship to God. Sadly, at a time when David was at the very peak of his power, when he was enjoying popularity and prosperity, he was guilty of neglect on one occasion and not leading his armies into battle. And in that moment where he stayed home rather than going with his army, on one occasion he looked with lustful eyes upon a woman named Bathsheba. He was not only guilty of lust, he fulfilled that lust by having her brought to him with whom he committed adultery. It was not long thereafter that it was found that she was with child. David, in an effort to try to cover his responsibility for that child, in an effort to try to cover his adultery, conspired in a variety of ways to try to place the responsibility for the child upon the husband of Bathsheba named Uriah, who was, by the way, one of David's loyal fighting men. Seeing the various maneuvers and plots and conspiracies that he attempted fail, David ultimately conspired with Joab, who was the captain of his army, to have Uriah put into the heat of the battle. At a given signal, men were to pull back from Uriah, leaving him at the exposure of the enemy for him to be killed. Nathan came to him, at the instruction of God, of course, and brought to him a story, a parable of a rich man and a poor man. The rich man, who had multitudes of flocks and herds and everything of abundance, the poor man having just one little ewe lamb, which even ate at his table. That was just a family pet, we would speak of it today. But a visitor came to visit the rich man. And the rich man, rather than taking from one of the vast number of animals that he had to prepare for the feeding of this visitor, he went and took the one little ewe lamb from the poor man and used it and killed it to feed the visitor. And he told David this story. And this angered David to think that someone would do such a thing as that. That someone with abundance would so exploit and take advantage of one who did not have all of that abundance. And then those famous words of Nathan as he looked unto David, though he was a king, Nathan, God's prophet, being faithful to his commission to teach David what he needed to be taught, he told David, "Thou art the man." We learn a great lesson here. Is it not easier for us, brethren and friends, to sometimes see the faults of others, as David did in that rich man, and fail to see similar faults in ourselves? Self-analysis, self-examination, that's one of the most difficult exercises of the human mind. We're inclined to be rather prejudiced, probably, a little bit biased. We're inclined to temper criticisms toward ourselves. And we can see the glaring faults of others, and they possibly even look bigger to us than they really are at times. But we can't even see things that are very much akin to it, even in our own lives. But Nathan pointed it out to him, "Thou art the man." And from that day forward, throughout the remaining portion of this great man's life, there was trouble after trouble after trouble. And most of his problems, as was warned, would come from within his own family. One of the problems that arose was with Absalom, one of his children. Absalom, of course, was a very unscrupulous kind of character. If you follow the career of Absalom, you see that he was a degenerate kind of person. But there was another son that caused him problems, and that was Amnon. Amnon ravished a daughter of David, who was the full sister of Absalom. And Absalom hated Amnon, half-brothers, within the family of David now. And he harbored that hatred for a while until he finally devised a scheme and a system whereby he had Amnon killed. He didn't allow the courts and the justice system to take care of Amnon. He took it upon himself, and he did these things according to his own way. That was the type of person Absalom was. And as a result of this guilt, he had to flee and became a fugitive from the presence and the power of David. He was a fugitive for some 3 years, until he finally wanted to get back into the good favor of David, at least to be allowed back into Jerusalem and around the court, and so he schemed. Yes, he even blackmailed Joab, for Joab to make petition on his behalf that David would allow him to return to the city. Eventually, he was allowed to come. And even a little bit further, he was allowed to come into the presence of David. But during this time, Absalom, as the Bible student remembers, undermined the people's confidence in David. That was no little task. David had been the hero of the people of Israel from the time that he had been a shepherd to the time that he had killed Goliath. From that moment all the way through his career, David was an exalted leader of Israel. And for someone to come and to steal the hearts of the people, as the Bible speaks of it, away from David, was no little accomplishment. And he did it in such a subtle, sinister, sly, sneaky sort of a way. People would come to the city to have their matters handled by the authorities, and Absalom would plant the idea in their hearts that they would not get justice. David did not delegate enough men to take care of their problems. David really didn't care. He would greet them, ask them their name, ask them where they came from, what was their problem. They would tell him his problem. He would tell them, "You'll not get anything here. Oh, if only I could handle these things for you. I'd see to it that you got everything you deserve. I would see that your problems were met. I would provide the kind of leadership you needed." And people began to swing their allegiance from David toward Absalom. Eventually, he lied unto David, took his leave from Jerusalem, led a revolt against David, and David suffered some of the darkest, most trying hours of his life when he was betrayed by some of his advisors. He was cursed by his enemies. And Absalom's forces actually drove David from his capital city of Jerusalem. But it was only temporary. The revolt that Absalom led was eventually crushed. The revolt was led by a man named Amasa. The recovery of the throne and the putting down of the revolt for David was led by a man named Joab. Absalom. Amasa comes in later. All of these A words, as you may recall, sometimes they get mixed up in your mind. Joab, having killed Abner to the disdain of David, now kills David's own son, Absalom. David mourned over Absalom. "Oh, Absalom, Absalom, my son, Absalom, would God that I had died for thee. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son." And Absalom was buried in a cold pit deep in the forest of Ephraim, his body lying there now beneath a pile of stones, which to my mind is a monument to parental neglect. For David had not treated Absalom properly as a father should a son. Having put down that revolt, his problems were not over. Another revolt took place, this time led by the man named Amasa. Amasa had been the captain of Absalom's revolt. And later on, a revolt took place that David, showing again his complex and peculiar character, being very angry at Joab for having killed his son Absalom, displaced Joab. He fired him from being general of his army. And of all people that he put in his stead, he put in Amasa, the very man that had led Absalom's forces against him. David was a most complex person. It seemed like, as Joab once said to him, "It looks like you love your enemies more than you do your friends." It wasn't very long, however, in a series of events that Joab killed Amasa. He killed Abner, he killed Absalom, he killed Amasa. Anyone that stood in the way of Joab was subject to death. Joab only knew, as we studied on Wednesday night not long ago, only knew one way of dealing with enemies, and that was to destroy them by death. That was in such contrast with the way that David would deal with his enemies. He was often very tolerant, very forgiving, very permissive, and he often disciplined and even punished his friends for the way his friends treated what he considered to be too harshly his enemies. And oft times he would provoke the ire of Joab, and there were occasions when Joab strongly, viciously rebuked David. You almost wonder how he was able to get away with it. The events of David's life that are unfolded to us here in 2 Samuel include some of the most intriguing and interesting schemes and plots, conspiracies, betrayals. Most interesting how he developed spy systems, runners, reports, advisors, what we would call double agents very much today. His whole career, as recorded here in 2 Samuel, is filled with that sort of thing. There's a very outstanding chapter, however, in 2 Samuel that's somewhat in contrast to the bloody fighting, the conspiracy, the scheming, the murders, and all that are told in this book. And that's that great psalm of thanksgiving and praise to God, the 22nd psalm. In chapter 23 and verse 1, immediately after that 22nd chapter as a psalm of thanksgiving, David is called the sweet psalmist of Israel. Toward the end of David's life, as recorded in 2 Samuel, David made a tragic mistake again, in addition to the ones that he had made previously. He took a census of the people. Well, you say, well, why is that so bad? Well, the counting of the people in and of themselves would not have been so bad, but it indicated a somewhat, at least, a shift of allegiance and dependence on the part of David. Heretofore, all of these years, he had depended upon the powerful right hand of God, so to speak, for his protection and preservation. And God had not failed him. But now, as he comes to the closing days of his reign, there was this implied shift of allegiance to begin to rely upon the strength and the power and the numbers of his nation. And he brought additional hardship, not only on himself, but hardship on the very nation that he led, the nation that he loved. God gave him a choice as to what the punishment would be. It resulted in 3 days of pestilence, a pestilence that was ultimately removed by David offering sacrifices. When the book of 2 Samuel closes, David is still on the throne. He has now become a rather aged man. More trouble awaited him before he died, because the death of David and the closing hours of his life are not recorded for us until we get into the book of 1 Kings, our next consideration. And the successor to David and how Solomon becomes that successor is also recorded in 1 Kings. But 2 Samuel is a book the main character of which is this man David, and the primary events that transpired during his time as king over Israel. We probably have recorded for us more of the intimate details of David's life and of his attitudes, his characters, and his words than we have any other Old Testament character. And there are some great Old Testament characters, Moses, and Joshua, and Abraham, and Isaac, Jacob, so many. But we probably have more of the inner soul of David revealed to us, and in this book, 2 Samuel, than any other of these great noblemen of God. We read about David from the time that he was just a shepherd lad, how he became the hero of Israel, developed to be the great warrior that he was, an accomplished musician. He was a king. He was a poet. He was a psalmist. He was a very complex personality. But the real outstanding feature about David was simply this. He was a fleshly ancestor of Jesus the Christ. Repeatedly in the revelation concerning the Son of God, he is referred to as the Son of David. And David's kingdom was a type, a pre-presentation, a pre-picture, a symbol, that which pointed to Christ's spiritual kingdom, of which we read in the New Testament. And this really is the significance, it seems to me, of David. How that God presents to us his ultimate plan being out there yet in the future, some years to follow. But he did it through David, showing the qualities and the characters of David, and showing the kingdom of David, and telling us all the while, this is like unto that which is to come. And once again, what we see even here in 2 Samuel, this book, as well as all the other books that we've studied thus far and all the other books prior to Christ, always pointing, as I continue to repeat, pointing to that which is to come. Showing that Jesus Christ is the central personality. The scheme of redemption is the central theme. And that everything about the whole Bible centers on the Son of God. But as a final comment as to the man David, of whom we read so heavily in part of the last part of 1 Samuel and all of 2 Samuel and part of 1 Kings, is this phrase that is found in 1 Kings chapter 15, speaking of another king. It spoke of how that David did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, and turned not aside from anything that he commanded him all the days of his life, save only in the matter of Uriah the Hittite. That having to do, of course, with his sin with Bathsheba. David was not a perfect man. The Lord did not hold him up before us as a perfect man. But he was called a man after God's own heart. He did fill the role, a very important and significant role, in the unfolding of the way that God has devised to save me and to save you. We owe much to David, and we're grateful unto God for the preservation of this period of history of the Israelites and of this man that we find in 2 Samuel.